The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Bud Light, on your home for the Houston Dynamo, Yahoo Sports Radio 1560, from high atop the Gow Building, overlooking the Galleria. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Dynamo All Access. More from Matt Peterson. He had the opportunity to catch up with former World Cup midfielder, the one and only Ricardo Clark of the Houston Dynamo.
Ricardo, a 3-1 win against the Portland Timbers, a Western Conference rival. That's two wins in a row. What were your takeaways from the win and, you know, what you all done right the last couple games?
Yeah, I mean, going into the Portland game, we wanted to, you know, build somewhat of a momentum moving forward. And we know that was going to happen by getting a second win back-to-back. And that's what we set out to do. I think it had been a while or some stat that we hadn't gotten a second win since last year. And we wanted to get things going, and we came out and we had the right mentality, we had the right play, everything was clicking, we were able to thankfully we were able to get 3 points and do it in a good way. So that was a positive, and we're just happy that we got 3 points.
So two in the midfield, central midfield with Giles up front, but it seemed like the game plan was mostly put Luis Garrido on Diego Valeri. Mm-hmm. You would control Nagby. Of course, they float a lot, but was that kind of the game plan, and how do you think you did against those two? Because it seemed from above like you both did a very good job on both of them.
Yeah. I mean, Nagby was actually playing the outside midfielder, and he was pinching in. So, they have good midfielders who, tactically play very well. So, obviously there was a lot of ground to be covered, and I think we were able to contain him pretty well. Nagby's a good player, and he finds spaces, and he's quick, and he's a good dribbler. So we had to contain that. But all in all, Luis did a good job on Valeri, he's always a tough player, and he's good for that position. And, we were able to contain him in the midfield, where I think they're very strong. So with that saying, that was a big part of our success. And with us finishing our chances up top, it was a good combination.
Rico, how's that partnership coming along? Of course, at times this year, there's been three in the midfield with Nate Sturgis or Brad Davis or Alex Lopez pinching in. Giles sometimes help out, but primarily defensively, it's you two. He came in last August. Mm-hmm. How is the communication? Mm-hmm. He obviously is a primary Spanish speaker. Mm-hmm. And how's the partnership going?
Yeah, I mean, it's not too bad communication-wise. Partnership is going well. We've had guys sliding in and out, and guys have done well to fill in. And he's always a player that's going to work his hardest and do dirty work. And I think we all need somebody like that on our team, and he's been good for us. And, you know, playing beside him, has been great. He always, is willing to help out and sacrifice for the team. And that's a real bonus from him. So, it's been great playing with him, and hopefully just continue our success together.
How much does he remind you of yourself when you were younger? Now, clearly, you're a very similar player, but I would say you're a little more guarded, a little less reckless. You know, your yellow cards and red cards reflect that. Maybe you think more than maybe when you were younger, but he is all energy, all action, not afraid to mix it up. Yeah. Is there some similarities from you as a younger player and what you see from Luis?
Yeah, especially with him playing in that D-mid role. When I was younger, I slid into that D-mid role more times than not, so... And my responsibilities were the same as his. So, it's it's just something that comes with the territory and being a number six. And the past couple games, my role has changed, or past couple years, my role has changed a little bit to be more of a two-way midfielder. But, he's been great for us, like I said, and he's been a good player, and I think he's going to continue to be big for us throughout the season.
Ricardo Clark, our guest on Dynamo All Access. Ricardo, forwards, the life of a forward, you're either the hero or the goat most of the time. If you're not scoring, the fans are clamoring. The pressure's on, but when you are scoring, life is good. Right now, the forwards for the Dynamo may be the best tandem in the league. The last five games, Will has four, Giles Barnes has four, Will got two more. How about those forwards and Giles dropping deeper, maybe a little more room for Will, but a little more dirty work for him? What have you seen from those two since the DC United game?
Will's been great for us the last two games. With Giles kind of jumping in that number 10 role, he's good at collecting the ball in that space between the midfield and the forwards, and that allows him to get the ball and turn and run at people, which makes him very effective. And I think that combination right there has been it's been good for us. I think last year he slid into that role towards the last half of the season, and then he was great for us. So tactically, I think it's been really helpful with the role of those two, and just adding the finishing touch just to seal games has been effective and successful for us.
Ricardo, of course, a lot of depth this season. You saw Alex Lopez start five straight games, and then he went to the bench last week, but still came off the bench and had an assist. Brad Davis came back from injury. Yeah. Nathan Sturgis is coming back relatively soon. What's the mentality from the players? We saw Kofi Sarkodie starting for over 2 years, and now he's trying to get back in the lineup with Horst in there. Yeah. What's the mentality from the team, knowing that Owen Coyle has not been afraid to shake things up a little bit in all three lines?
Yeah, I mean, that's natural in this game. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of people fighting for spots, and I think that makes everybody just play a little bit harder and is healthy for a team sometimes. And it's good that we have depth on the team, and we're going to need that, especially coming into the summer with national team call-ups and all that. And you got injuries throughout the season, so it's good that those guys are getting games, and we have guys on the bench that have game experience and even big game experience. So that's a positive.
Rico, this Friday you go to the LA Galaxy. They are unbeaten and 27 straight at home, similar to the Dynamo a few years ago, as Houston went 36 unbeaten at home. But sort of a wounded animal a little bit. They're winless in five. They lost to Orlando 4-0 on Sunday. They've really been hit by injuries to Robbie Keane, Jose Villarreal, Robbie Rogers, Omar Gonzalez, but still a very difficult team. What have you seen from them this year? What are you expecting on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, on Friday, it's going to be they're going to come out, especially off their loss and wanting to respond. Without the injuries, with the injuries, I should say, they're still going to be a strong team coming out at home. Obviously, they've shown they've had a good record and are strong there. So we're going to have to be on top of our game and just look for them to come out, strong, and we got to match that. And thankfully, last time we were able to get a good result, and we just want to continue that and do it again this time.
Three goals on Saturday against Portland, two on the road in Toronto, four against Kansas City a few weeks ago. What do you think the team is doing better offensively to click? The first few games of the season, that was the storyline. Defense was good, but offense wasn't scoring much. Anything different you've seen these last month or so? More balls in the back of the net?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things, just balancing things out. like I said, tactically we've been pretty good, and I think just a combination of the bounces going our way and finding the back of the net. And we just want to hit our stride at the right moment, and right now we're doing well with that. We just got to keep it going. I think everybody's hungry and like I said, guys coming off the bench are doing well for us with Will and Alex, and we just want to keep that going.
Lastly, Rico, center midfield for LA. For years it was Juninho and Marcelo Sarvis. Sarvis now in Colorado. It's been a bit of a work in progress figuring out who to partner in the middle there with Juninho. He's been around for a long time. He's a very good player. They used Mika Vyrinen last week against Orlando City. What about Juninho presents challenges, and what are you expecting from the center of their part?
Yeah, well, I think he's a very efficient player, and he's good at doing the simple things well, and you know, he can read the game really well, and that's something we're going to have to contain and something we're going to have to look at once we you know, do video and all that. But he's been a good player for them, and we think you know, we'll have a game plan come, you know, 2 days before the game, and figure out exactly how we want to go about containing them and their team.
Thanks, Ricardo. Best of luck.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
So that was Ricardo Clark visiting with Matt Peterson. We've got a lot more to come on this show. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back with more. Again, a reminder, Manchester City is in town next week. Get your tickets over at HoustonDynamo.com.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Bud Light, on your home for the Houston Dynamo. Yahoo Sports Radio 1560, from high atop the Gow Building, overlooking the Galleria. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show after that 7-Up break, and we do appreciate all the work and support that we get from Bud Light. Bud Light reminds you to get over to BBVA Compass Stadium. All kinds of big games coming there. The Gold Cup is coming there. You saw Querétaro and Ronaldinho there earlier in the year. Live soccer is where it's at down there, whether it's a Houston Dynamo Dash. Bud Light reminds you to get down and support the game live in Houston. Bud Light, longtime sponsors, certainly of me on the radio, and I can't say thank you enough to Budweiser and Bud Light for all the support they have provided. They are the official sponsor of Major League Soccer and the Mexican national team. And as we talk Mexico, well, we have to bring in our expert. He's Tom Marshall of ESPN. Tom, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the show from Guadalajara, Mexico.
No problem, Glenn. It's always a pleasure.
Well, let's first talk, obviously, with something that's very important going on here, connected to the Houston Dynamo. Eric Cubo Torres was accused and alleged of sexual assault. Tell us what's going on there and what your thoughts on the situation is.
Yeah, I mean, first thing to point out, like you said there, it is only an accusation at the minute, so there's nothing been kind of not been charged with anything. Basically, a local newspaper picked up on it that on the 22nd of April, there's a 19-year-old girl's accusing him of sexual abuse, is the actual term. The allegation, if you read it in the newspaper, is to do with spiked drinks. So, yeah, it is serious. It's one of those where it's very difficult to have an opinion about because, you know, it's an allegation at this point and you know, you just don't want to get involved with that kind of thing. But from a football point of view, for Kubo's point of view, you know, it's been a terrible season for him, to be honest. I mean, you know, he was on the bench yesterday for Chivas against Atlas, and then in the first leg of that quarterfinal, also against Atlas, he wasn't even in the 18. So it's not going well for Kubo at all at the minute.
Yeah, and he's had some good games in the Copa MX and things. I mean, is it just that, you know, Chepo de la Torre just doesn't have the confidence in playing him, or is he just in a pecking order that's behind the likes of Fabian and De Nigris? I mean, what do you think it is? Why doesn't he get more opportunity?
Well, I actually asked Chepo de la Torre about this about, I think, 2 weeks ago, and he said, you know, basically, Kubo came into preseason a bit late, and by that time he wasn't quite in rhythm where the other players were a step ahead. And so what Chepo said was basically Kubo's been a step behind since then. And obviously the team have been doing quite well. Omar Bravo is one goal away now from breaking Chivas' all-time goal-scoring record. I mean, formation-wise, Chivas only play with one striker as well. So that, you know, that really doesn't help Kubo Torres because at the minute he's behind Omar Bravo and Aldo de Nigris for that spot. So combination of factors, you know, but nobody could have predicted this before the season. I think everybody thought he would be the automatic starter and it'd be the others trying to kind of displace him.
He's Tom Marshall joining us. Cubo Torres, you know, with social media now, whenever there's something alleged, before it's been investigated, it's kind of sad because people rush so quickly to judgment. What's it like down in Guadalajara? Obviously on the internet, it was all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, on Saturday, the story broke, and it was everywhere. It was the story of the day. You know, it was one day before Chivas' biggest game of the season. You know, it's just very difficult. It's a very, I think more than anything, sad because If it's true, then obviously it's very sad from one point of view. If it's not true, it's also really sad from the other point of view because it damages his reputation. So, you know, it's really difficult to come to any conclusion without knowing the actual facts.
All right. You took in the Atlas Chivas game, and obviously last night I flipped the TV on, and I was just astounded to see, I guess, rioting and the fights going on in the crowd and police and security coming in there. You were at the match. Talk about it.
Yeah, it was again, a very sad scenes. I mean, you know, Atlas went 4-1 behind, sorry. I mean, this is a club without a trophy since 1951, and the fans are just absolutely desperate for any kind of success, more so against Chivas. And that has spilled over, and it spilled over on occasion, and it did so again on Sunday. There was one pitch invader who went on, who quite jumped the barrier, and that kind of inspired about 20 to 30 other Atlas fans who also followed him and jumped on the pitch. The game was stopped for about 15, 20 minutes. There's some awful scenes with, you know, police and a section of the fans kind of trying to beat each other with batons. So ugly scenes. And I think there has been a huge response today in Mexico in terms of there has to be something done about this behavior.
Yeah, so what do they do about it? Because at times it seems like it's almost been accepted. And, you know, listen, this is beamed out all across the United States. This is not good PR for Liga MX. And no. people here look at it and then make judgment about the entire league because of the behavior of specific groups of fans. We know it's been going on for a long time. Is it just them coming up now and, you know, because it's fresh, saying that they're going to try to do something about it and then look the other way? Or do you really think they can do something about it? And if they can, what is it you're going to do?
I mean, you know, this happened where I'm from in England, and there was an absolute revolution in the way the match-going experience completely changed. And I think that at some point that is going to have to happen in Mexico. The big fear, and I think the fear of people here in the media and the league, is that it turns out like in Argentina. Because we saw those scenes, Boca against River, the last week. Nobody wants that. Now, what can they do? First of all, the majority of Mexican stadiums aren't segregated. And it's one of the things that I absolutely love about the game down here, is the fact that you get Chivas and Atlas fans mixed, boyfriend, girlfriend, going together to the game. You couldn't get that in many European countries in South America. But the problem at the heart of the matter at the moment in Mexico is the Barras Bravas, which were, you know, a South American idea that has been exported to Mexico and has slowly got a bit more power in the clubs. And, you know, and they're a bad influence. They do provide the atmosphere, but they stepped over the limit now. And I think we're going to see, you know, real crackdown from authorities. I mean, these guys should be in jail now, but
yeah, you know, there's a criminal.
Only 10 got arrested, so.
Yeah, there's a criminal element to some of these groups. That's fact all over the world. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, the power that some of these groups have over clubs to be destructive puts a lot of these clubs in fear. Do you think it's that deep, like in Argentina, in Mexico, where you know, some of these supporters groups, because of their strength and their relationship with the pro clubs, have maybe the clubs in a little bit of fear?
Maybe a little bit, but I honestly don't think it's anything like in Argentina.
Yeah.
I think that it has been more violent over the last few years. And I think now they have to nip it in the bud. They have to stop it now. They have to really crack down while we still can, while before these groups get even more power. But yeah, I don't think it is as bad as in Argentina. There's certain clubs as well, like Atlas and the 51, that's the Barra group, and they're known in Mexico for having a bit of a reputation. You've got the Pumas one as well, who's got a bit of a reputation, and you know, certain other ones, but in general, most of the time things go pretty smoothly. It's just these idiots, basically. I mean, yesterday it was a group of, what, 50 to 100 fans out of 60,000 who really kind of just damaged the reputation of not just Atlas, but the whole of Mexican football.
All right, let's take the allegations out of the Kubo Torres situation here. Just look at it from a playing standpoint. And by the way, you wrote an article where he has made it very clear that he's innocent, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm gonna link this article up on the Soccer Matters Facebook page.
Yeah.
But do we, guy, I guess I don't even know where to go with this because, I mean, the Gold Cup, Copa America coming, who knows if he's even playing soccer?
Yeah, no, one thing, though, Glenn, that's worth pointing out is that he wasn't in the Copa America squad.
Yeah.
So definitely not going to that in June. And just by matter of elimination, he won't be going to the Gold Cup either because Mexico's four strikers will be Vela, Chicharito, Giovanni Dos Santos, and Oribe Peralta. So you've got those four, and I think there's almost guaranteed that those four will be there. And so Kubo, the only issue surrounding is, you know, what he's going to do this summer. Is he going to go to the Pan American Games in Toronto? Which I think if you're a Houston Dynamo fan and he goes there, you would be very disappointed. I mean, obviously the caveat is that will this case that's going on in the minute in Guadalajara have any effect? I mean, honestly, I don't know at this moment.
Yeah, it's something you just don't want to pass judgment on. I'm just waiting to see how it all unfolds. I'm not jumping anywhere too fast because I think we all have a tendency to just jump in right away and have an opinion without even knowing what the facts are. How can anybody know what the facts are?
And I think it might take a long time as well. I mean, the law is a bit different down here. Obviously, in the United States, you're innocent until proven guilty. In Mexico, you're guilty until proven innocent. It's the reverse. So it's not that the legal system isn't as open as in Western Europe and the US. So I think what's going to happen is this is going to drag on for a long time.
Well, Tom, as always, so insightful. We appreciate you coming on the program. Remind everybody where they can get your writings.
Yeah, it's up on ESPN FC, Liga MX, and the Mexican national team.
I'm going to link some of Tom's articles on the Facebook Soccer Matters page as well, and that's how you can get your way over to ESPNFC.com. Tom, as always, thank you very much. Great insight from Mexico, and we'll be coming back to you again to keep us up on the Mexican League playoffs.
Justin Glenn, thanks for having me.
All right, he's the one and only Tom Marshall, ESPNFC, and we get it straight from him down in Mexico. We'll take a break. We have a lot more to come here on the program.
Listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Bud Light, on your home for the Houston Dynamo, Yahoo Sports Radio 1560, from high atop the Gal Building overlooking the Galleria. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Dynamo All Access. Well, Monday on Soccer Matters, I had the opportunity to catch up with one hot striker, Will Bruin. Will, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Glenn, thanks for having me.
Yeah, put into context the importance of this win, especially after getting a great road win in Toronto, but then capping that win with a real comprehensive home win.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about it. Brad brought it up before the game. He said, we haven't won back-to-back games since last August. So when you kind of look at that and you kind of realize that, man, it's been that long since we won two games in a row, it's kind of shocking. But we really wanted to be the aggressor in this game and come out with our foot on the pedal instead of, because we're at home with the crowd support, so we wanted to put the pressure on them.
9 minutes in, you get the header, the great delivery from Davis. It froze the goalkeeper of Portland. You created some great open space for yourself. Tell me how that happened.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not sure who was marking me. I kind of saw myself free. I was like, okay, well, everybody's kind of crowding in the near post, so I'm going to come around the back post and maybe something will get flicked on or something. And obviously Brad put in a great ball, and it was one of those where you almost have too much time to think about the header, but you know, I just headed it down, and more times than not it goes in when you head it down.
He's Will Bruin joining us here. 2-goal performance against the Portland Timbers. You know, every weekend around the world when games are played, you'll see strikers that are waiting for delivery to come to them, as opposed to being in that mindset of making runs and believing you're going to get on the end of delivery and hitting areas as opposed to waiting and reacting. How important is that as a striker, to be someone who's like, look, I'm going to hit the near post and believe that the delivery will get there?
Exactly. I think the run is just as important as the finish. If you don't make your run with conviction or pace, you know, then you're going to get bumped off the ball, or a center back's going to be able to just kind of nudge you when you go up. So the run is very important, and like you said, you can't react to it. As when you're attacking the set pieces, you can't just react to where the ball is going to go. You got to get there with confidence that the ball is going to be whipped in there, and then that's how you finish it. Because if you were trying to react to the service, obviously you're going to be a step behind the defender, clear it out, and it's not going to go as well.
He's Will Bruin joining us here tonight. Let's talk about your second goal, because I think I made the comment on the Root Sports broadcast that you were the smartest man in the room or the smartest man on the field, because this was a play that, you know, some people might have turned their brain off and been walking around, you know, with the score the way it was. You obviously were still connected and saw something that maybe many others didn't.
Yeah, well, that's funny. When I went back and watched it, Borchers didn't even think I was coming. Like, I don't think any of the center backs, either of the center backs, had any inclination that I was going to be making a run. And that's just when it gets hot down here in Houston, you see plays out, so things like that can happen.
Yeah, without a doubt. Did you get the sense that they were fading in the latter stages in the last 15 minutes?
Oh, yeah, for sure. We actually watched that goal today during film, and it was about 2 minutes where we had the ball, possessing it, just moving it side to side. And there's nothing worse than having to defend in the heat like that. And then to cap it off with that goal, it was just a good little 2 minute span.
Now, lobbing a goalkeeper like that, I know strikers take a little bit more satisfaction out of that type of goal. It was a class goal. You lobbed a goalkeeper. It was almost a delicate goal you scored, but, man, what a goal it was.
Yeah. When I hit it, I was like, oh, please be enough, because I didn't want to hit it over the net, obviously. You just want to barely touch it and get it up and down real quick. I thought maybe the goalie was going to get his hands on it, but I put enough on it to get it over him, which was good.
So this game, I commented to somebody after that I thought this may have been your best game in the history of the Houston Dynamo. And here's the reason why, Will. And I know you had hat tricks against D.C., and you've played a lot of great games for the Dynamo.
Yeah.
But I thought your game without the ball against Portland Saturday night was exceptional.
Yeah, I think that's something that Owen's been really good at kind of teaching me, so to say, because, you know, I've usually had more success with a partner up there, and now playing up there by yourself, you gotta be well-rounded. You gotta know how to play it. And we've been talking about smart running a lot, because, you know, when it gets hot or when it's late on in the game, you can't just run to run. There has to be reasons for your runs. If you just run around like a madman, then you're gonna tire yourself out, obviously. So picking and choosing when to make runs, when to hold the ball, when to press, it all comes just with more experience at the position.
Now, I know I asked you on the Root Sports broadcast, you know, you do have a coach who was a big goal scorer. So I was kind of trying to find out if there are a lot of little subtle things he's doing. I thought your use of your body, too, when you were going up in the air, even balls you weren't winning, you were leaning in on their defenders, putting them off a little bit so that they didn't have a clear run at heading the ball. And I just, your body control, there were so many little things that I thought were just exceptional. Does he get specific with you?
He does. The first thing that comes to my mind when you say that is he tells me to use my weight against them, like kind of use my body weight as leverage against opposing defenders and kind of just like roll off of them, you know, instead of trying to out-muscle them.
Yep.
Just kind of use my weight and their weight like against them. If they're coming in hard, I kind of just will turn a little and they run into me and I just peel off them, you know what I'm saying, a little bit. So it's kind of like you said, using body weight and control. It's all little things that we've been talking about a lot this year, and it all kind of came to fruition last night or Saturday night.
Yeah, so look, I mean, he came in, he said, Owen Coyle made it very, very clear that, look, past reputation doesn't mean anything. And it's almost like he's coming in with a clean slate. He's got to assess all the players that he's inheriting based on MLS, based on a lot of things. All right, so nobody's been a sacred cow on this team. Everybody's sat on the bench, Boniek, Garcia, all guys that are starters, Kofi now.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, when you were not starting a couple of the games in the beginning of the year, what kind of goes through your mind? Was that a healthy thing for you?
You know, it was. To be honest, I could have easily pouted and been like, oh, why me, blah, blah, I got something against me. But Owen does a really good job at making sure that nobody takes it personal. The only way you can change it is on the practice field. I mean, feeling bad for yourself, making an excuse, that doesn't do anybody any good. So I think sitting on the bench, and then when I would get my minutes, it makes them much more valuable. And it makes you want to work harder at trainings to get back into the 11. It's always the goal to be in the 11. And if you're not in the 11, it's the goal to be in the 18 and then get on the field. So there's a lot of steps to the process, but you know, it ultimately comes down to just taking care of your own work on the training pitch every day.
And I guess it's a great feeling because people have seen examples already that, you know, you may not be in the starting lineup, but you put the work in, you produce, you'll get right back in there, and that's been obvious in your case.
Yeah, exactly. Things change week to week. You know, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but we've probably had a lot of different lineup changes already this year. But I mean, 12 games, we've probably had, I don't know, 6-7 different lineups. But, I mean, that just makes the working week up to the game that much more important.
Is that made it interesting and invigorating for the players? You know, different lineups, differing tactics for different games. You know, there is something fresh and new about that.
Yeah, exactly. It's I think it's a good way of not letting guys get too complacent. I think sometimes with the long season, if guys are regularly playing every game, they're just like, well, maybe I don't have to be at my best this week because I'll be in it next week. But now, you know, you got to be at your best every game because you could get pulled from the 11.
Yeah, Will Bruin joining us here tonight. What a performance against the Portland Timbers. If you were not down there, soccer fans, you have not been in BBVA Compass Stadium. You got to get down there. It's a great experience. The Dynamo are playing great now. They've won two in a row. They will head to Los Angeles this week. So speaking of L.A., you may or may not have seen them yesterday against Orlando. Your former teammate, Tally Hall, getting back in goal. I'm sure that was something nice for you to see.
Yeah, that was great for Tally. I mean, it's a terrible injury he had, but, you know, the long rehab is all worth the game, I'm sure. I'm sure he felt great getting the win.
How about just looking at that game and the environment and the crowd, which was spectacular? You know, obviously I was there. It was an amazing atmosphere, an hour and 20 minutes before the game. What are your thoughts looking at Orlando from the outside?
It looks fun, to tell you the truth. It looks like it would be a fun club to play at. They got great support, obviously it's their first year, but their fan draw out has been amazing. That's just great for the sport, great for the league. There's just so many positives that come with it.
So heading into the LA game, you guys had a very good road game out in Los Angeles. I got to think you guys are sky high right now, confidence wise.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like we've got two wins. We are sky high, but we can't get too high because we got another game come Friday, you know, so we enjoyed it through the weekend, but now it's all focused on LA. We know this is the perfect time to go play them after they took a 4-0 defeat. But, you know, if we focus on us and we're focused for 90 minutes, we're a very tough team to beat.
All right, so my gut tells me after the center backs had some problems against Orlando that Omar Gonzalez will be back in the lineup. I know you've played against him a number of times.
Yeah.
How do you deal with a guy like Omar Gonzalez as a defender? He's a designated player for the LA Galaxy, U.S. national team guy. What would be some of the things you do against a defender of that stature?
Yeah, he's a big guy. He's good with his speed. He's very good in the air. So obviously he's going to be tough to beat on goal kicks or restarts, but you know, I think that's one of those where you got to keep going after him. You can't let the game be easy for him. Like I did against Portland, running down that last ball. You got to chase every ball down. You got to do a lot of movement in and around him because I'm sure he doesn't like to chase forward. So you know, I'm pretty sure he's going to like everything in front of him. So if I can turn him and get him running, kind of get him out of his comfort zone, that'll give us the best opportunity to get chances going forward.
He's Will Bruin. He is part of the Houston Dynamo, who will be on their way to Los Angeles this Friday to take on the LA Galaxy. Hey, Will, great game. Best of luck against Los Angeles. We'll all be back here in Houston watching.
All right. Thanks, Glenn.
My thanks to Will Bruin. And Will Bruin, boy, he is in a great place as a striker right now. And again, I can't say this enough. I truly thought his game against Portland, best game he's ever played in a Dynamo uniform. And for me, it was because of what he did without the ball. His pressing play, his alertness, his sharpness, his hold-up play, his use of the body, all things. We're seeing Will Bruin's game blossom here under Owen Coyle. We'll take a break. We've got more to come.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Bud Light, on your home for the Houston Dynamo. Yahoo Sports Radio 1560, from high atop the Gal Building, overlooking the Galleria. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 AM. We roll on here tonight, and it's time to talk some Houston Dash. And joining us now is Brittany Bach. Brittany Bach, 28 years of age, has been around the women's pro game. Los Angeles Soul, Washington Freedom, Western New York Flash won a title, Sky Blue, and now here with the Houston Dash. She joins us now. Brittany, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's first off talk the most important thing here. After an ACL injury, 13 months, physical therapy, you got 45 minutes this past Friday with the Dash. How did that feel?
No, it was great, especially being in the home crowd. Obviously, it was a much longer return than I wanted it with another scope in there, but the support of my teammates, my family, my coaching staff, the fans, Houston, everything, it just was so great to finally be back out there.
Yeah, it's an emotional process, and despite the fact that you're, I think, one of the real sort of in-the-community leaders for the team, because you're out there, you're everywhere, you got a great dynamic personality. But, you know, it is lonely, the physical therapy side of things, coming back from an ACL. There is a lot of thinking that players do, having been there. And I had Tally Hall on last week talking about his ACL, and he finally came back this past Sunday playing with Orlando against L.A. There is a lot of thought and thinking that goes on during some of these solitary time periods, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I also, it's hard not to say, you know, you see other players come back in 7 months, 8 months, and I'm sitting here, and it's been 13 months, and I'm just going crazy. And if anyone knows me and knows how I play, it's not that I'm scared to play. It's not that. It just, my knee was just not ready, not the strength of it, but you know, I'm thinking to myself, what am I doing wrong? You know, what are people thinking of me? And I just had to let that all go. And the reason I came back almost, I mean, 13 months, I just was, I had to be smart with it. I had to, you know, look at all the other surgeries I had, and my body has been through a lot. And the way I play, it's a very physical, strong, Brian Ching told me last week, he said, Britt, when you play, you just got to scale it back from 110% to just 100%. So, I mean, it wasn't an issue of not being mentally ready. It was just this pain that I, you know, but it was definitely hard, and it's still, you know, a process. It's not like I can go out there every day and I feel great. You know, even though I'm back on the field, it's still, I have to watch my body and take days where it's a little bit lighter. And my trainer laughs because she knows that that's really hard for me to do. So,
you know, take us through, and you and I were talking before you came on tonight, take us through some of the litany of injuries you have, because it is pretty remarkable, some of the injuries you've come back from. But I can't imagine now at 28 years of age, and I hope I'm not saying something I shouldn't be saying, that you're ever going to feel perfect again with the amount of injuries you had. So tell my listeners the amount of injuries that you've kind of gone through.
Yeah, well, I had actually only one little minor scope in college on my hip. But then playing professionally, when I play, I just, you know, I go all out. And you think your body's invincible. So my rookie season playing in L.A., I had some pain in my left foot, and about a month and a half later, some pain in my right. But I was starting and playing as a rookie, playing every game and getting called in with the national team. I had gotten called camp after camp. So I just kept playing through the pain, and turned out, you know, 8-9 months later, we found out that I snapped a ligament in my Liz Frank joint on my left foot, and I broke the sesamoid bone on my right foot. So I had double foot surgery, and coming back and through those, had follow-up surgeries and other things on my left foot, and then my right foot, I blew my ankle out, and then broke my wrist falling, trying to protect a broken rib, and then the ACL, and then the scope. So
how much of this do you think played a part in your international career? I mean, it's obviously derailed a little bit of that, right?
Oh, I can't even tell you. I mean, I still have, it still is my goal and my dream to play in a World Cup and an Olympics. And obviously 28, I'm getting older now, but that, I mean, I think that's one of the hardest things, is because I know that when I'm healthy, that I know how to put the work in and can be at that level. And so for me, I don't think it was a work ethic issue to be at that level, but rather these injuries, right? When I was just there and I was getting called back in, I literally got called. I remember getting called out of one of my foot surgeries. And as soon as I got out of surgery, it was a message saying, congratulations, you know, your next World Cup, camp with the national team. And I'm just, it deflated me. And definitely I was in a low time, and I worked so hard to get back just for some fluke injury to happen. So it's definitely been a process, and I have been humbled. I've been extremely humbled along the way.
Now, I want to go back to something I said before with you, Brittany. Your presence in the community, pioneering the women's game, women's soccer, the Houston Dash. You and your teammates embrace this fully, but I got to say, it's pretty impressive the efforts that you go to push the game forward, because let's face it, it has to be pushed forward, and all of you in some ways are salespeople.
Mm-hmm. Since I've been playing professionally, it's not, people look at it like, oh, you're a professional, and yes, we play professional soccer, but it is not this glamorous life that you see these other male professionals playing, and it is a job of ours, and the league already, the professional league, you know, two times has folded, and it really is upon us. And I was actually talking to someone today that this is, we have to put in this work now and get into the community and sacrifice a lot of, you know, I've played on 5-6 different teams and gone overseas, and you know, we're not doing it for the money. It's because we want to grow this game. I know how I was when I was an 8-year-old, you know, growing up into the game and watching the women's national team play, and I wanted to be there, and I want to give these girls that chance because I know how I looked up to them. So getting out into the community, I do it so much. I'll be at the grocery store. I'll go up to random people, either with soccer stuff on or little girls, and ask them if they like soccer. I've heard of the Dynamo. You know, people hear the Dynamo, well, I can say, hey, with a Dash. And I go up to people randomly in parks, and I just think how much that affected me when I was younger to be able to talk to a professional athlete. And to me, it's just, I'm a very personable person, and so it's easy for me to do that, but I've grown into it too, and it's what's going to grow the game.
Brittany, last question before I let you go. You know, how much stock should we put in the Women's World Cup in Canada when it comes to promoting the NWSL? Is there a danger in that? I mean, I don't think there's any question that if the U.S. women perform well, people have the opportunity to see them in the NWSL. There will be a platform there, and there will be a spike. But should we be careful not to put too much stock into that?
Well, I mean, obviously, the last time that with the WPS, when we had the Women's World Cup in 2011, it really did. I mean, coming back from that World Cup, I was playing for Western New York at the time, and the crowd, I mean, it was a great time because everyone rallies around the U.S. and the women's national team when they come back. You know, I think it's important to – that's a thing that we're going to have to take where we're going to use that going forward. But I also think there's a lot of talented players in this league here right now, and players who very well easily could be on that national team, and – you know, there's only 21 players on it. So I think, you know, we do need to focus on the players here too, because if we don't show that, you know, we've got a league here now, it's yes, those players are great and they really, you know, help the level too when they come back. But there's a lot of people putting in a lot of hard work and talented players here, and, you know, that deserve on every team, deserve people knowing that we have professional players here, you know?
Yeah, and that's the reason why, you know, we're going to continue to get you and your teammates on this show, because we want to star build you guys. You're all tremendous soccer players. You're professionals. You're also pioneering the sport. And, look, we look forward to having you on again. You're doing a great job, Brittany. Welcome back. I'm glad you got your first 45 minutes against Chicago, and I'm sure Randy Waldron was glad. And I wish you the best of luck the rest of the season.
Thank you so much.
That'll do it tonight here on Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM. Again, a reminder, podcast at ESPN975.com. You click on the audio vault, and then you go to Soccer Matters. You will find Dynamo All Access podcasts there and Soccer Matters. Facebook, it's Soccer Matters. Get over there, like us, friend us, and join the conversation over there. A lot of good debate about a lot of different topics. Also, you can follow me at Twitter, Glenn Davisock. And for all your ticket needs for the Dynamo and Dash, it is HoustonDynamo.com. We've got a ton of great games coming up here in Houston, Texas, including next week, Manchester City, the Premier League in town. The Dynamo will take them on. Gold Cup will come to BBVA. Mexico, Honduras in July. So much going on here in the city of Houston. Get out to games live. Get your tickets at HoustonDynamo.com or the BBVA Compass Stadium box office. For producer Michael Carroll, everybody here at Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 AM, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night.